Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, or am I? Maybe I'm a puppet. I'm not a puppet, but I have been speaking to some puppets. Coming up on today's episode, we go behind the scenes of Spitting Image, including an interview with Boris Johnson, in inverted commas, and Greta Thunberg. And we also speak to some of the people who make the puppets and the man behind the whole thing, trying to keep the show on the road. So that's honestly, it's a lot of fun. That's coming up on the episode in just a moment. But first is today's columnist panel. No Knight at the Marriott today. James Marriott's away. So we've got India Knight and Katie Bulls. What happened to the Tory rebellion? Beginning of the week, we were going to have cabinet resignations. Boris Johnson's premiership was over. He was breaking the manifesto commitment. He was putting up taxes. He was finished. And then five people voted against it last night. What happened?
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it? But also in a way slightly predictable. And we once again saw the power of anonymous briefings in the sense that they give ministers license to say lots of things that they can't really be held to account on or even ask why they didn't do what they said. I think it was, again, just a classic case of people getting quite overexcited. We heard there were at least, you know, five cabinet ministers who were going anonymous to say they weren't going to support this proposal. And then you had another anonymous cabinet minister saying there are way more than five. And yet it sailed through cabinet with just a few tiny complaints about, the wisdom of manifesto pledges, but no resignations. And I think we are seeing the fact that ultimately, I think a calculation was made by both those on the payroll and those who would like to be on the payroll, that it wasn't in their interest to actually take too much of a stand on this. I still think if you look at the number of MPs abstaining, there's clearly some discontent, but I think everyone clearly doesn't want to put their head above the parapet if they're in such a small number that it could really affect their chances of promotion, perhaps.
I suppose there's also an element of if at the moment, and the polling did seem to shift between when it was a theoretical rise, there was public support was quite high, when it became slightly more realistic and Boris Johnson actually announced it and people had sort of interrogated a bit, it was only narrowly that I think 44% supported it, 43% against. But if it is now happening, I suppose it's quite bad politics if you go around saying, well, this is a terrible thing that we're doing. And actually, because, you're going to be standing for election next time round and, you don't want to spend the next 3 years going around saying the thing that you're doing is terrible. So actually just biting your tongue and unless there's any prospect of stopping it happening, the crude politics of Tory MPs thinking, well, it's going to happen anyway. There's no value in me going around saying this thing is awful.
Yeah, and I think that goes clearly to the power of Boris Johnson. He is in a powerful position as leader right now. So if you only feel as though a handful of Tory MPs are going to say they're not going to support it, why would you join that group if you're not going to have an impact? So there's something in that. I think that when you're looking at what this means for Tories at the next election, lots of the MPs who have abstained are doing so because they're genuinely worried about voting for something that they promised they wouldn't do. And I think therefore with the polling, clearly if there was huge public outrage at the proposal. Just as you think about things like Barnard Castle and Dominic Cummings, it makes everything more exacerbated, so people are much willing to say stop this. But I think it's quite hard to predict where exactly this one's going to go, because you can see, as you say, it's happening, more people turning against it. And also, we don't yet know what happens if the policy never quite reaches social care as promised, if more money is needed, if there are more tax rises. So I think that there are plenty of grumbles to come. I wouldn't say Boris Johnson has, you know, the full backing of his party on this indefinitely still.
Yeah, it's battle averted rather than avoided altogether. India, what have you made of watching this? This sort of slightly strange position we're in now, where the Tories are the ones who are putting up taxes to raise money for the NHS and the Labour Party is opposing it.
Well, he seems, Johnson, very safe from the obvious structural things that most prime ministers worry about. The opposition can't get near him because he's spending big and taxing up, so you can't outmanoeuvre him from the soft left. Also, I think, I haven't been in my bonnet about this, also Labour has allowed left and right to be defined not by economic issues, but by issues around wokeness. So Johnson's spending plus his unwoke politics, I think, appeals to the North and to plenty of Labour people who don't want the replacement of economics with woke. So the more Labour appears to put woke issues before economic ones, the more they're stuffed. So that's the opposition. And I think really what this all reflects is that his own side knows that if they take the pain, they will get an almost certain win at the next election. And they have no other power centre. People go on all the time about Rishi Sunak, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be any very concrete evidence that he has people who'd put their careers on the line for him. And I thought it was interesting that Peter Lilly, who's 77, led the opposition to the tax rises.
and also, Rishi Sunak is, you know, he was, if left entirely to Boris Johnson, he'd have just given the money to the NHS and not worried about where it came from. It's Rishi Sunak who's behind it. There's an interesting sort of dynamic going on here. Is the point that you make, India, about how left and right has become sort of cultural rather than economic. Because you've got the people who are very cross about this, traditional conservatives. Ian Martin, writing in the Times today, saying the Tories are no longer the party of business. Alastair Heath in the Telegraph today, real Tories will never forgive Boris for turning his party into blue Labour. And part of me thinks, well, what's Alastair Heath, what are real Tories going to do? Vote Labour in protest? It doesn't seem that likely. It's part of the coalition, the calculation that Boris Johnson makes, that he hangs on to traditional Tories, and then if he can scoop up a load of previous Labour voters, then that's just smart politics, isn't it? I mean,
he's only a Tory to the extent that Tories like him. I think if more Labour people liked him, I mean, don't forget, it was Labour voters who shifted and enabled him to beat, Ken Livingstone, twice as Mayor of London. So if more Labour people liked him, he'd be a Labour Prime Minister or a Lib Dem Prime Minister. What he is he's an election-winning machine with no particular political baggage or political ideals.
Yeah, but that actually works quite well if you're trying to win elections. Katie, do the traditional right-wing, economically conservative voters, does Boris Johnson need to worry about them? Is there a risk of another party emerging on the right, a sort of Brexit party, UKIP? You know, that's always the risk that as the Conservatives move to the centre, that there's a party that comes up on the right. Does Boris Johnson need to worry about that at this point?
Well, I think India is completely right in the sense that at the moment, where would these voters go? And I think it's no surprise that the right-wing media or the right-leaning media are the most critical of these plans, but there's no other party to endorse. And I don't know, in the sense that we've seen how hard it is for a party to arrive afresh, take seats in an election, but we've also seen with the Brexit Party how they can take enough of your vote margin to have quite a difficult effect, potentially put things at risk for you. So you do wonder, is Nigel Farage going to come back? And though he has a very bad record in terms of getting MPs into Parliament, in terms of cutting into the Tory vote share. I think the record is much more threatening to the Tories. I think one thing I hear about from those Tory MPs who are worried about the direction of travel is they think that if there was a new party, perhaps led by someone like Nigel Farage, which focused on low taxes and also anti-net zero in terms of the cost of net zero, that's going to become more obvious as the months and years go on, that could, you know, take 5-10% from the Tory vote and then you are in a different place. So I don't think it can be ruled out. And I think it's more about, would it take enough of the Tory share to help Labour move up a bit rather than, you know, replace the Tories in any way?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, David Cameron's living proof of what happens when you worry perhaps a bit too much about that party out on the right wing. You end up promising a referendum and then that's where you end up. One thing I wanted to discuss with you both is the government's launched this consultation today on making a vaccination a condition of deployment for frontline workers in health and care settings. This idea of sort of mandatory vaccination is a real sort of... It's one of those big ethical questions that I'm not entirely sure our politics is currently capable of discussing in a sensible, rational way. To be honest, it's a six-week consultation being launched today, so it's going to be some while off yet as to whether or not it actually happens. But what do you think about this, India? Because it's one of these issues which I'm quite easily swayed on, I think.
Yeah, I'm quite easily swayed as well. My instinct is that it's fine, that needs must. That's my instinct. But I agree, it's ethically complicated and I would be swayable. Well, up to a point. No, I think it's broadly a good idea.
Well, I suppose there is something that I suppose on the one hand, I don't think we should be necessarily told what to do, and actually mandating it sort of slightly fuels the nutters concept of this being some great government conspiracy. Mm. However, you do have to question the wisdom of someone who is literally working in the business of looking after sick people.
Yeah, and refusing to get jabbed.
And won't get jabbed, you know. Yeah. What do you think, Katie?
Yeah, I think when you're in settings where you're specifically working with vulnerable people and that's the main function of your job, perhaps different rules should apply to you in terms of the various jabs you receive. You know, I think you can actually widen it out past just the COVID jab. The only thing I wonder, though, is obviously we're still in a stage where we're learning more about the virus, you know, even a year and a half in. But there is evidence suggests, for example, that if you have antibodies, that is quite strong protection. Depending on which studies you read, it can be more. So you do wonder if there could be a case where if you have proof of, you know, strong antibodies, that could be, you know, so it's not just that you have to get the jab. I wonder if there's a way to explore it in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose that's the, but then you sort of start getting into, you sort of testing everyone. And then that's, you know, that seems even more sort of like something from a dystopian jar or something.
Yeah, but I just wonder if people had a choice of, you know, as in, I completely agree it's a more complicated way of doing it. But if you're worried about kind of the moral implications of imposing something, I kind of think if there is a option which is more time consuming for that specific person, but they still want to follow it, and if the science suggests it's safe, then it's their choice to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that does make sense. Talking of dystopian futures, let's talk about Gavin Williamson. we were all ready to go down to Downing Street today for the reshuffle that never was. We were braced, we were poised, like coiled springs to go down to Downing Street and pay a moving tribute to Gavin Williamson. He's still there. The reshuffle, before we get on to Gavin Williamson specifically, do you think the reshuffle was a real thing, Katie? Or was it just some very clever, was it some daft reporting by the Sunday papers that the Downing Street realised was probably of use to them?
Yeah, I don't think it hurt Boris Johnson in getting this rebellion down to a number you can count on your hands. But I mean, I do think Boris Johnson has been thinking about a reshuffle for some time. We know he is averse to it because the last one actually was pretty disastrous in terms of what it did to party morale, particularly in the junior ranks, and some that was disguised by lockdown rebellions, but it did have repercussions. I think they were thinking about one before the summer recess, before everyone was sent into self-isolation. So I think there's reason to think that they are still thinking about when they might do it, but clearly floating it has helped Boris Johnson get this rebellion down. And meant that you had so few people willing to put their money where their mouth is on anonymous briefings. So I think it's probably a bit of both.
And it does feel like, actually, do the reshuffle, present the new team at party conferences, the reboot. We've made the promises, now let's get on and deliver them with some degree of competence, which brings us to Gavin Williamson. India, The most interesting part of this story, the Marcus Rashford, Gavin Williamson story, when he claimed to have met Marcus Rashford in an online Zoom meeting, and it wasn't. It was the black rugby player Mauro Itoje. The fact, for me, the most interesting thing is that was put out by Gavin Williamson's team. They, rather than saying, no, he just got, you know, there was a meeting in the diary and actually it didn't happen. They put out, no, he just got two black people muddled up. And that was the official line out of the Department of Education. It doesn't suggest a huge amount of faith in their Secretary of State.
No, it really doesn't. And I also think it's just an extraordinary mistake to make. I wouldn't have a Zoom call with you for half an hour or whatever and then walk around for the rest of the week. I don't know why I'm laughing. It makes me really angry. Claiming I'd been speaking to Jeremy Clarkson. Come on.
I was looking forward to who you were going to confuse me with, and now I'm going to take offence.
No, it's not necessarily the comparison I'd make in my head, but I'm just giving an example.
I was hoping you might have said James Marriott, because he's about half my age, so that would have been I'd take that as a compliment.
Maybe he's away at squirrels, James.
It's just extraordinary. And the fact that
but anyway, you know, to not be astute enough to know who you're speaking to suggests you're only seeing the colour they are. You know, one went to Harrow, one is Marcus Rashford. Come on. And it makes me angry because, I mean, I'm talking about journalists because I know mostly journalists, but, you know, brown and black journalists are always being confused with each other. Krishnan Gurumurthy and Faisal Islam, or Satnam Sangera and Safaz Mazur, or Anita Rani and Saira Khan, or Michelle Hussein on the Today programme being still being called Michelle by lots of the people she interviews. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And as you say, for his own team to put it out is, I don't know what is going on.
Katie Balls from The Spectator and India Knight from The Sunday Times. And of course, you can read India every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesclipbox. Up next, what happened when I went behind the scenes at Spitting Image?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast now. Strap yourselves in. This is what happened when I went to the Spitting Image Studios. Wow, here it is then. Right, straight into the workshop. Blimey, okay. Right, so what can we see? We've got sewing machines on the go over there. I can see right across in the far corner, there are some makeup artists touching up a puppet. One person's doing a sort of head, and somebody's doing some very weird looking sort of rubber gloves, the sort of hands of the puppets. And then across here, there's someone mending Elton John's glasses. And across the room, there's as a dressmaker, I suppose, wrestling a frock onto a headless torso, which looks pretty gruesome. And just there, there's model maker Jonathan Savile, who's having problems with Dominic Cummings.
His head isn't throbbing evenly, so it's working perfectly well that side, but nothing seems to be happening that side.
Well, at least said about that, the better. Let's go to the other side of the room and take a proper look at some of the puppets. So this is the politician's shelf. So I think that's Boris Johnson. For some reason, he's got ice cores coming out of his nose. Matt Hancock, Cristiano Ronaldo. There's finding its way into politicians. So Chris Whitty, Rishi Sunak, and you've got Prince Charles, and then all along here you've got more politicians. So you've got Mike Pence, Dominic Raab. Presumably Mike Pence won't get much of an outing in this series. Dominic Raab, Xi Jinping, Scott Morrison. So that's all politicians, more of the cabinet, footballers down there. And then interestingly on here, this side, you've got celebrities. So you've got people like Bill Gates, Elton John, Greta Thunberg, Harry Styles. But in this one, you've got Carrie Symons, of course, the Prime Minister's wife, who's been filed underneath celebrities, which I imagine she'll be quite happy about.
I'm head of the puppet workshop, so oversee all the making of the puppets.
This is Locke Collette, who works closely with Roger Law, one of the original co-creators of Spitting Image, back in the 1980s and 1990s, before it was rebooted last year.
The entire process, from the caricature stage, so Roger commissions the caricatures, and those are then signed off by the production, the top production staff. And we then put that out to a sculptor. And the sculpts are then effectively moulded, cored, which creates an interior, a void for the hand to go up into the puppet. And they are injected with a foamed latex, effectively like baking. So the latex is whipped and it has a rising agent within it, so it rises to a certain level. It's injected into the mould, baked on a very low heat like a meringue, and you know, comes to us within a couple of days, and we then sort the fitting up, the making up, the skull going in, it's painted, it's wigged up by the wonderful Darlene, and it's on set, and that's how the rotation works.
It's pretty quick.
When we're in topicals, yeah. For instance, last year Marcus Rashford came into the public eye, and we wanted to make sure there was a puppet there of him, yeah. that week. It was a two-day sculpt. It was moulded in plaster and run in latex, which is effectively like a willy boot.
How many people's hands does that pass through to get from drawing to there?
So let's say Adrian's one, sculptor two, moulders three, foamers four, the people that scumble and trim. So this comes and it's sort of foamy. It's, you know, got little holes all over it. That's filled in, so that's five. Mechanics are six. The people that actually make the eye mechanism, seven. And then the painter would be eight. Wigging up, nine. Costume, 10.
Wow.
So it's 10 stages.
10 stages.
I've never thought of that before, so thank you for that question. We'll walk down the back.
Yes,
here.
You lead the way.
So quick introductions, this is Christy, who's our sort of number one sculptor.
Hello, Christy.
And she's working on Phoebe Waller-Bridge, so this is at what we call blocking out stage. So this is just literally a day's worth of work so far. So she's just created the shape.
If you're doing Phoebe Waller-Bridge now, who have you had the most fun making clay models of?
When I had to do Michael Gove, was that one came out really easily. Same with Priti Patel. All the ones that you know a lot and you have a particular feeling about, and especially if they know, you know the direction they want to go with the character, it makes it a lot easier. When somebody is kind of neither here nor there, it's actually trickier, because also you have your own feelings about them. You like them, so you don't really want to make them look terrible. So other people have to step in there and kind of say, go on, push it. Make him look like the caricature. So there is a part of you that reserves a little bit when it comes to those characters. But when it comes to the bad guys, let's say, they're great. They're just good fun.
Let's be honest, there's no getting away from it. Michael Gove's cheeks look like testicles.
I'm incredibly flattered that, I mean, it's an honour, you know, it's like...
But they've made your face look like genitals.
I think even my most generous friends would say that my face was designed for Rick.
Up next, we'll continue the tour of the studio. And someone was saying we might even be able to grab a chat with the Prime Minister.
Matt Chorley on Times Radio with GoDaddy, providing all the help and tools you need to grow your business online.
This is Matt Chorley on Times Radio on an exclusive tour of the Spitting Image Studios ahead of the return of the satirical puppet show this weekend to our screens. And I've just been granted an audience with a VIP in the cabinet room.
Well, hello, Prime Minister. Welcome to Times Radio.
It's a great honour to be here on Talk Radio, and my favourite clickbait-driven news in Colorado.
Well, they are one of our valued sister stations, so we're a big fan of right. them. It's a lovely place that you've got here.
Thank you so much. I very much like the Times Radio studio in that it's better to hear than it is to look at. And a lot of the stuff I film here, frankly, is appalling.
Now, Prime Minister, I see you've got a painting of one of your predecessors behind you on the wall there.
Would you like to order, sir?
Yes, I will have a steak.
How'd you like it?
Oh, raw, please.
And what about the vegetables?
Oh, they'll have the same as me.
Are you a big fan of the Iron Lady?
I'm a big fan of many ladies. The Iron Lady, the Stone Lady, big girls, little girls, tall girls. I love them all. Although, of course, now that I have Carrie, I don't look at women that way. Certainly not unless I'm on my laptop.
There's been lots of speculation recently about your cabinet. You're going to carry out a reshuffle, maybe move some people out, bring some new people in?
Yes, I'm going to, I got rid of one of the last remainers in there, Matt Hancock. So I need to get rid of Rishi for a number of reasons. One, he's pretty talented. Secondly, of course, he's Remainer. And thirdly, the b*** is after my job. And I'm going to bring in someone who would pose no threat to me at all. Someone of such limited intellect that they will never pose a threat to my position. So, Matt Chorley, it is an honour to promote you to the cabinet where you will be safely ensconced. And I will be safely Prime Minister forever.
Well, I'm glad that, once again, your grip on the facts means you think that Rishi Sunak was a Remainer and I wasn't. So, which is absolutely... wrong.
Details, dear boy, details. As long as it allows me to frankly slit the throat of any who tries to take my job. Since when, by the way, Matt Chorley of Times Radio, have I been particularly bothered about facts? Do you think all of a sudden I've got a new taste, a new desire to start speaking the truth? Well, then you're very much forgotten. But look, I appreciate you being, frankly, at groin height. So get yourself under the table and make yourself useful.
It's so weird, isn't it?
The speed at which...
It's suddenly... It's just like a person. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
So, Matt Ford, we've taken you out of the innards of Boris Johnson. How many voices are you doing on this series?
So I do Boris Johnson, Keir Starmer, Donald Trump, Phil Foden and Alex Salmond.
That's quite a broad... mixer.
It is, yeah. I mean, four of them... I guess Salmond and Trump have their similarities.
Oh, really? God.
And Boris and Trump have their similarities. And then Phil Foden is, you know, just a lovely guy who's very good at football. So they're kind of, it's a mixture, mainly politicians. But so Salmond, that very much like Matt's great appeal, you know. Some of you may not know, F's is THs, like, thinking a lot about sort of stuff that I should be doing, you know, a lot of thoughts gone into that.
No, Phil Foden, very high, you know, very nice at that and very sort of soft-spoken. I think England did very well over the summer.
Now, it's interesting. Everyone knows what Boris Johnson and Donald Trump sound like. Yeah. Do that many people know what Phil Foden sounds like? And therefore, is your job a bit easier?
Very possibly, yeah. I mean, Keir Starmer was the one that I had to slightly knock up at short notice. And in fact, it was only watching him, I interviewed him the other month, and I noticed that the puppeteers had noticed something that I think no one else does, that he does this sort of double hand chop when he talks a lot. And I sat opposite him and I thought, I first saw that on Spitting Image. They noticed that. And I was like, how have I not noticed that? But he does that sort of head to the side and this sort of double hand chop. But really important, Matt. Really important. You've got to change the country. You know, 45, 97, you know, 64. What they have in common. You know, Labour sees the future. Got to do it. You know, agree with the government. Will they get it right? I disagree with them. Will they get it wrong? You know, they had this sort of thing. And I was like, these guys noticed it like a year before everyone else.
And now when you're doing the voice, even though you're just recording the voice, are you doing the action?
Oh, absolutely. Sat at home in my underpants. Just like, yeah, because we do it all in our spare rooms. So it's kind of weird. You know, I just record it into my laptop. And then you see it played out here on this grand stage, and you're like, oh, my God.
And because you could do it with CGI or whatever now. Yeah. It just wouldn't be as good. There's something watching Boyce's hair fluffing about there. Yeah. It's amazing. And suddenly, you were doing the voice, they were behind. But you suddenly, it takes about 2 seconds, you start thinking it's a real person.
Well, you can't help because there's something about the fact that it blinks. Like, there must be something hardwired into us, evolutionary. Like, it blinks, it must be alive.
It must be a person.
So you can't help. And also, it really looks like him, even though it doesn't. It really does.
Yeah.
And when they're moving and they've got all the little touches, the puppetry is, I think, it's the funniest thing about the show because they really inhabit. They really move like them.
But also, it's because when you're watching, you're realising subconsciously all the work that's got you, all this information you're taking in, the portrait of Margaret Thatcher, the hair, the eye, all that. And like you said, all that effort, probably to do a knob joke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and that's what makes it so funny.
That's what's great
to go
it.
To all that trouble.
Yeah, because obviously people say Spitting Image is a comedy thing, and obviously it launched so many impressionists. But really, it's the grotesque latex reproductions of those people and the way that they move that really, really makes it funny. And I just think that's the magic of it. And to stand here, telly isn't made like this anymore.
Yeah.
And yet we've done it for this, again, just for a load of nonsense.
Matt Ford there. And we continue our tour of the Spitting Image Studios. And we all hopefully stumble across someone new in Downing Street.
Here I am. I am in the rightful place. Behind me is the Iron Lady, whereas I am the Climate Lady.
So, Greta, I'm interviewing you here in number 10.
Yes.
It appears you are now, what, Prime Minister?
No, I don't want to be Prime Minister of this country. I want to be the saviour of the world.
And how do you think you're going to go about doing that?
Well, firstly, I think I need to, appeal to a wider range of people. So I am thinking of becoming a pop star to spread my message.
And what sort of songs will you be singing?
I said a hip hop, the hippie to the hip hip hop, and you don't stop rocking to the bang bang boogie. Said up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie, the beat, or the earth song, one of those two.
Greta Thunberg, thank you for joining us on Times Radio.
Thank you.
Has she always got massive hands like that? Or are they Boris's hands?
All of the hands of the puppets are enormous, aren't they? Because they're sort of latexy.
I suppose because they are your hands. You haven't got your hat. Yeah, exactly.
Her head is really small compared to mine.
There was something very funny about her very small head and these big man hands coming out today. So I'm here now with Jess Robinson, one of the voices on Spitting Image, including for Greta.
Greta, Adele, Kim Kardashian, Angela Merkel, Nicola Sturgeon, I think Ellen, I think there might be an Olivia Colman coming up, a Jess Phillips who I've still got to learn. Who else? Gwyneth Paltrow, lots of most of the female voices.
A good old range. Who's the most fun to do?
You know who I'm going to miss is Melania. I mean, I don't know whether she'll be in this series or not, but I hope so because, you know, you don't have to move the face.
And what about doing someone like Greta? Because she is a child. Is it difficult? You don't want to be too cruel to her necessarily, or is everyone fair go?
No, I think people like Boris, Trump, they are fair game, 100%. But we've got people like Greta, Marcus Rashford, Tom Daley, and they're more like heroes of the piece. They might be the voice of reason, you know, so we treat them in a different way.
So you're doing Jess Phillips. Talk me through the process of, you get the call saying, we've got a Jess Phillips puppet being made.
Yeah.
How do you go about learning a new voice?
Okay, so I literally found out that I was doing Jess Phillips about 10 minutes ago. Usually it's the night before, so that's great. I've got a little while, maybe 2 or 3 days to prepare. I will go home and watch loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of interviews of her on YouTube. I'll get some clips of her that I'll listen to on my headphones constantly. Then I will record myself and then compare it to a clip of her. Then the last stage is running it past my mum. She is the most critical person that you've ever met in your whole life. If it gets past her, it can go on the show.
Is there anyone you'd really like to do who isn't currently part of the series?
Yes, I do miss Theresa May. I wish she would do something to get into the news so I could do this voice.
It's not a proper job. Jess Robinson there. Now, I think there's one nagging question through all of this. Is it really possible to send up this lot? Can you make fun of someone like Boris Johnson, who is this outlandish comedy character who achieved fame on panel shows and zip wires and not through pamphlets and appearances on Question Time? Can you send up Boris Johnson or Rishi Sunak, when the real Rishi Sunak boasts of doing exercise bike routines where he imagines himself as a sizzling fajita, or Priti Patel wants to process refugees on derelict oil rigs, or Dominic Raab says the sea was actually closed? Where can satirists go? It's something I've asked lots of satirists over the years on the Red Box podcast. This was Armando Iannucci a couple of years ago, explaining why he couldn't bring back The Thick of It.
Think of it worked on the basis that we knew what the conventions of politics were and therefore how to wander away from them. But if the conventions don't exist anymore, yeah, or if they're being reinvented every day, it's very difficult to know what's abnormal. And politicians are sort of inventing their own... They're subverting the rules of politics deliberately. And therefore, the comedians I find who are most adept at getting to the truth of what's going on act like journalists.
But for Ian Hislop, the Private Eye editor and Have I Got News For You team captain, he told me a couple of years back there's nothing new in the idea that our politics is beyond satire.
The first writer I know who said satire is pointless was Juvenal. He was the Roman satirist. He was writing in 100 AD. And he said, you know, Rome's crazy now. I mean, it's full of immigrants. You know, no one's any good anymore. Only the leaders from the old days. I mean, the leaders we have now, they're absolutely hopeless.
It's beyond satire.
I mean, it's beyond satire. Yeah. And why do I bother to do it? You can't do it anymore. There's nothing to say. Nothing is beyond satire. You just have to work harder.
Well, the person praying that there is still mileage in satirising this lot is Jeff Westbrook, a former writer on The Simpsons and Futurama, who is now the showrunner on Spitting Image and deciding who gets a skewering. So I headed upstairs to grab a chat with Jeff between reading scripts, overseeing edits and ordering yet more puppets. How is this second series different to the first comeback series a year ago? Have you changed anything, a different approach, a different, I don't know, tone, a different, you know, some new characters?
Have some new characters for sure. We have, you know, more Hollywood celebrities. We have some people we had to say a fond farewell to, like Dominic Cummings, although he might make a reappearance here and there.
He does have a habit of doing that.
He does sort of pop up.
He does have a habit of coming back.
Yep.
One of the things that I was thinking about in terms of, you know, satire, when you've got, particularly when you're doing British politics, when you've got a politician who is essentially prime minister because he's funny, one of his, part of his appeal is he makes his own jokes.
Yes.
Is that more difficult? Is satire easier or more powerful if you're sending up someone who's trying to be taken seriously than if the guy is essentially reveling in people laughing at what he's doing?
Well, it's a little tricky. We had this similar kind of problem with Trump last year, which was that he was like so absurd in his real life, what do you do?
All right, we got 15 minutes to clear out the White House before Biden moves in. Take anything that's not nailed down.
A little bit of it is taking the character and maybe running with it a little bit, you know, and amping up the craziness, basically. The advantage of a guy like Boris is that he does so many crazy stuff that there's always something going on you can jump off and have a little fun with. It seemed like it would be hard when we first started, but it turned out that actually he gave us enough stuff to work with that we could just kind of wander off, that actually he's kind of a delightful character to have around now, actually.
And actually it was freakish seeing him downstairs and Matt was doing the voice, and yeah, suddenly he comes alive. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
And what about other British politicians? Because actually he's like really colourful, loads for you to go at. A lot of the cabinet, shadow cabinet, less so. So who have you particularly got it in for this series?
Well, who do we have it in for? We're going to have a shot at Sajid Javid. We're going to have a shot at him. We're always got our eyes open on Priti Patel. Dominic Raab, he's been embarrassing himself lately, so it'll be fun to have a go at it. And on the Labour side, I mean, we actually have fun with Keir Starmer. Our joke about him is that he's so very pompous and wordy and over the top. And
gangs of hoodlums, people petrified in their own homes. The country's falling apart, Aaron. If only I was in a position to do something.
You are the leader of the Labour Party.
Exactly. Powerless.
And now, 12 months on, because he wasn't in the job very long last time, 12 months on, people know who he is a bit more. So you've got
a bit more, yeah.
There's a bit more flesh for you to put on the bones.
A little bit more flesh, yes.
A tiny bit more flesh.
It's still a struggle.
and just talk me through what's happening with this, because you're not only doing the UK series, it's also international, but then you're at the same time doing a German version of the show?
Yes, for Sky TV in Germany, there's a whole German writing team. They're going to take... So last season, they just took our show and dubbed it in German and ran it, and it was popular, I guess. So this year, they're writing specific German content to sort of swap out for the British political stuff.
There's something about going to all this trouble, the amazing sets, the costumes, the puppets, just for a joke. It sort of adds to the joke, because you could do it in animation or CGI or whatever. Yeah. It would be much easier.
It would be, yes, that's true.
Palaver. What is it about the appeal of going to all this trouble of making the puppets and the eyes and the hair and all of that?
Well, so a lot of it is the sheer physicality of the puppets. I think this is the caricature, like Roger Law behind the caricature, that there's a genius in the caricatures, that when it's translated to an actual physical thing, you just can't. It's just different than animation. They live in this weird space, I would say, between reality, real, just between humans and animation. They sort of have some real physicality, but they're also larger than life and a little crazy. So it's just a very unique space. And I think because they're real, I certainly find that as I spend a season working with these people, I just begin to believe that they're the real characters. Like we'll just be sitting there looking at Elton John, and it's like, oh, Elton, what's going on today? And it's like, oh. Same with Boris too. They all seem to come to life in a way that animation wouldn't, because it'd always be a two-dimensional flat drawing. Yeah, there's something magical about the sculptures and the caricatures that just give it a unique look, and uniquely British look too. I think there's something very British about the caricatures.
So Matt Chorley, it is an honour to promote you to the cabinet, where you will be safely ensconced. And I will be safely Prime Minister forever.
That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh no,
how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.